Good morning. All right, so in our speaking right now, we're transitioning into where we're not really doing a series anymore. We're just going to be doing sort of random topics, I guess, sort of choose your own adventure. So we haven't gone back into time, back into Luke, but I'm going to go back into Luke, into the story of Zacchaeus. When we went through systematically through Luke, when we got to this point, we kind of looked back at what had already happened in the book and then what was going to happen going forward and sort of passed over the actual story of Zacchaeus. Where we are in the timeline of Jesus' ministry would be that we were probably on the Thursday or the Friday before Passion Week. So this is him returning to Jerusalem for the very last time, and that what he's facing in his head is that he is headed to the cross. And I think it's worth acknowledging that that's where we are in the story to see how Jesus still continues to treat people. Where if it was me, I think if I knew that in a week I was going to die a horrible death, that I would not have a lot of care for the rest of you. That's me, and I do not care about your problems anymore. I've got better things to worry about. And I think that would be most of our views. This is me time now. And when we see Jesus, we see him very much still the Jesus that we see the whole way through, caring for the people that nobody else cared about. Let's see if I'm on or not. Nope. There we go. All right, so the story is in Luke 19. I'm going to read through the whole story first before we start on the slides, because sometimes I think everybody doesn't necessarily know the story of Zacchaeus, and sometimes I think we speak and we act like everybody knows everything, and it is just a little niche 10-verse story, so I want to read through it so that we know where the story is going to go, and then we'll go back to the beginning and work through it again. He, being Jesus, entered Jericho and was passing through. There was a man named Zacchaeus who was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was, but he was not able to. He was not able because of the crowd, since he was a short man. So running ahead, he climbed up a sycamore tree to see Jesus, since he was about to pass that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, because today it is necessary for me to stay at your house." So he quickly came down and welcomed him joyfully. All who saw it began to complain, "He's gone to stay with a sinful man." But Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, "Look, I'll give half of my possessions to the poor, Lord, and if I have extorted anything from anyone, I'll pay back four times as much." "Today salvation has come to this house," Jesus told him, "because he is the son of Abraham, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save." So as we go back to the beginning, we come here where Jesus is just entering into Jericho, and there's a man there, a man who up to this point we've never heard of, and after these 10 verses we'll never hear of him again. Church history has sort of mixed reviews on what they think happened to him. He may have gone into another city and started a church. Some people view that he might have been the other disciple that replaced Judas, that it went from somebody who had a love for money to somebody who learned not to care for money. We really don't know, though, where Zacchaeus shows up. This is where we get him. And the little that we do know about him is that he was a chief tax collector and he was rich. This is also the only time that we ever see the term a chief tax collector, so they don't really know exactly what a chief was, although it would seem that it was a better title, that it was a higher standing than the rest of the tax collectors. He may have had other tax collectors working underneath him, and he may have also, many of the tax collectors would have been working under Herod, who was over Judea. It's possible that as the chief tax collector, Zacchaeus was actually working directly for Rome, and that was his relationship, and that's why he was viewed as the chief tax collector. And then in turn, this job would have made him very, very rich. The Roman Empire, Rome itself was extremely expensive to run. You had to basically give the people bread so that they wouldn't rebel. They had the gladiatorial games, where it was all entertainment to stop them from rebelling. And they also had a very large and very expensive army. So what they did was they would expand their tax base. And when you were taxed, as goods moved around, you weren't just taxed once. Every time you got to another tax station, you got taxed on that item again. So some items at this time would have been up to 100 times as valuable as they should have been because of the taxes. So if you had something that was worth a dollar, by the time you actually got it, it would be worth $100 because of the tax system. So it was extremely strenuous to be under this tax system. So that developed a hatred for the whole system. It also was a hatred because they didn't want to be under Rome, and the taxes were a constant reminder that they were under Rome. And then these tax collectors, they were Jews. So they were their own people who were then taxing them on the behalf of these tyrants. So they were very much hated. The money of a tax collector, they don't think was actually accepted at the temple or the synagogue. And it was very likely that if Zacchaeus had tried to get into a synagogue, he would have been told no, that he was not welcome there. His role, understandably, he was disliked. But his role completely sort of excommunicated him from their society. To the point that he wasn't even able to go to the synagogue. He was completely separate. He was in a really great spot, though, because Jericho, as far as taxes, everything that came through Israel would then go through Jericho to go to the east. So all of the trade that went out to the east from there went through Jericho. So through this whole system, he was able to make himself very, very rich. Now, if you were in Israel and you owed taxes and you couldn't pay, what these tax collectors would do is they would then give you a higher interest loan. So you then had people who owed these tax collectors large amounts of money at large interest rates. So you can definitely see where, you know, if we had guys going around like that today, again, we probably wouldn't like them. It would be very easy to look at them, and we don't like the taxes we do pay, and nothing's 100 times as expensive as it was, and we don't have a evil empire ruling over us. And I don't like paying taxes. I don't like looking at my paycheck and be like, oh, there's where all my money goes. So this system would be so many times worse. You can definitely see where, again, it would be understandable for people to not like the tax collectors, and specifically not to like Zacchaeus. But Zacchaeus, he sought to see who Jesus was. We're not really told why he wanted to see Jesus, but he was curious about who he was. And we can sort of wonder what led him to be curious. Levi, he was one of the disciples, and he was a tax collector. So again, they're separated from society, so they can only have so many friends. It's possible that Zacchaeus and Levi were friends, and he knew that, you know, that Jesus was willing to actually associate with this person. As Jesus has gone through his entire ministry, he's talking to outcasts. He's talking to people that have been pushed out of society. And he would have looked and thought, like, what is it with this rabbi that he's willing to talk to people like me? He's willing to associate with the outcasts. And then he tries to go to the synagogue and he's turned away. So what was so special about this man? It was very simple, his plan. I just want to see him. I just want to lay my eyes on who this Jesus guy is. And these two steps, curiosity and simplicity, are very often the very first steps that people take towards faith. That they just look to Jesus and they're curious to find out who he is. It's nothing super complicated. They just go, I want to know who he is. And then we now, be as the church, carrying out that mission and continuing that mission of seeking the lost, people are able to look at us And I think we need to reflect on ourselves and say, when people look at us, when people look at the church, do we make them curious? Do they look at us and go, there's something different about that person? There's something good about them that I can see, and I want to know what's different about them. That do they look at us and go, I want to know about Jesus because I don't understand why that person's the way they are. And that initial little curiosity makes them to start to consider that maybe they want to know Jesus, and that that's the first step that they take is looking at us and going, oh, these people actually make me curious to know more about what it is that makes them tick, as opposed to really pushing them looking at us and going, I don't really want anything to do with that. But he was unable to because of the crowd, since he was short. And here we have the people who are around Jesus, the people who have managed to get up to the front, the people who sort of think that they have a place there, and they're all bunched around Jesus, and they essentially create a wall that they're not able to, that Zacchaeus, being a short man, isn't able to get up there. But if you've ever been in a crowd, you can usually like sort of move around, especially if you're little. I remember as a little kid, I'd get through crowds, no problem. You just sneak through. Little. Now a little bit harder. I have to knock people over, so it's not ideal. But as Zacchaeus, like, he couldn't get to the front. And it's pretty likely that when people saw him coming, they closed that little gap up. Like, this little twerp doesn't need to be coming to see Jesus. And the crowd, the people who were the closest to Jesus, became the people who were actually stopping the man who needed to get to Jesus from being able to get to him. And I think we need to make sure that we are not that crowd, that we don't become the gatekeepers of Christianity, that we look at people and we go, that person is unworthy of even being curious about who Jesus is. That person is unworthy of being able to look at him. Because what if he got in there and he could make Jesus look bad, that he would associate with somebody? So we're going to block them out, and we're going to block them out. And we can become the crowd, and there are situations where the church is undoubtedly the crowd. That we are gatekeeping Christianity, and we're not all doing that. And it's not that everything we do, and most of the time I don't even think we're intentional. It's just that we can create this aura around it that we don't like these people, and we keep them out. And they are the Zacchaeuses of this world. They are the people who are spiritually bankrupt, and they need to get to Jesus. And we need to make sure that we as the church never become the crowd, and that we are always trying to give access for people to get to Jesus, because he does not care whether they meet our standard of social status or our standard of goodness to be able to get to Jesus. He came to seek and to save the lost, and the lost guy was stuck on the backside of a crowd. And I think some of this too we can do in more of a passive way and not look at it so much as a negative where we're actively stopping people, but that as part of the crowd that we're actually drawing people in, that we're making them curious. I also think of the last time that I spoke to Dave at camp. He talked about when he felt called to Spanish, and he ended up being a pastor in Massey. And he was in Spanish in the grocery stores. Nobody talked to them. That they were the weird Christian people. That's how they were viewed. And he was in Massey. He was the pastor. He was doing Sunday school. He was doing Awana. They were there all the time. And they ended up stepping back from some of those things. And they joined a bowling league. And they joined that bowling league, and they went and they bowled with people from Spanish. And then they just became those Christian people that are on my bowling team, those people that I bowl with. And all of a sudden in the grocery stores, people were saying, hey, Dave, hi, Shirley, and talking to them. And they became a part of the community. And then they were able to actually carry out their initial mission of telling people about Jesus in their community, because they joined a bowling league. So the crowd doesn't even need to be viewed as this negative thing. I don't think we want to be there anyways, but we don't want to then just be nothing. We want to then go into our community and be something that people look at and go, well, I really want I'm drawn to these people. I want to be a part of them. And we can actively open up those gaps in the crowd so that people can actually see who Jesus is. And he sought to see Jesus, who he was, but he was unable because of the crowd. So running ahead, he climbed a sycamore tree to see him, for he was to pass that way. Running wasn't something people did in this culture if they didn't have to. They had like big cloaks on, you had to gird them up, and it would have been sort of embarrassing for a Roman official and a rich man, somebody who has some position. It wouldn't have been Zacchaeus' nature to just, oh, I'm going to run. It certainly wouldn't have been his nature to say, oh, and now I'm going to start climbing a tree. The sycamore trees, they had large, low branches, so it would have been somewhat convenient to climb. But if anybody's tried to climb a tree recently, it's not a super graceful activity. There's that point where you don't know if you're going to get initially up, and you're just going to be the person trying to climb a tree but can't. And he goes and he climbs this tree. And he had to climb this tree because of the crowd. But the crowd for Zacchaeus wasn't a good enough excuse. If we're somebody who is outside of Christianity and you're just looking in, and you're here because you're curious, and you look around and you go, I don't know if I like the crowd. That at the end of the day, whether or not you like the crowd doesn't matter. What you need to do is get to Jesus and find out whether Jesus is somebody that you want to have a relationship with. Because that's the only thing that matters. And if you get to the end of your life and you go, well, you know what, at one point I was gonna be interested in Jesus, but then I looked at some of his followers and thought, well, they're not really perfect people, and if those are the type of people that follow Jesus, I don't want anything to do with him. And we've all heard that. That people look at it, and we as a church have to be really conscious that we don't cause that to happen, but also if you're on the outside, that's not a good enough excuse. When you get to the end, you're not going to be able to use the excuse, well, there's some people who are associated, I didn't like them, so I stayed away. You're either going to have a relationship with Jesus or you won't. And Zacchaeus, when he couldn't get through the crowd, he had to find another way to be able to see who Jesus was. So he quit worrying about what the social norms were. He quit worrying about what was acceptable and whether he sort of looked like an idiot trying to run along in his great big coat and then climb up a tree to peer at a man as he walked by. He quit worrying about all of that, and he ran ahead and did it. And he gets to have an interaction with Jesus Christ. He gets to have a relationship with him because he found a way to get around the crowd. So if you're here and you're just curious about Jesus and you're looking at him, don't worry about the rest of us. There might be people here who can help you to learn to know who Jesus is and who can help you get to Jesus. But ultimately, the only thing that matters is that you get to Jesus and you make a decision whether or not you want to have a relationship with him or whether you don't. Don't let anybody else stop you. Don't stop at, oh, this person wasn't great, so I didn't go any further. Just push them out of the way, metaphorically or physically, and just get to Jesus and make a decision like Zacchaeus does. So he's up in that tree, and he thinks that he's the one who's come to see Jesus. And he very quickly realizes that he was trying to come see Jesus, but it was really him that was being sought. That when Jesus entered that town, Jesus knew that he was coming for Zacchaeus. And I think this is a beautiful image of that, those two sort of different perspectives of we have a responsibility to get past the crowd, and we need to initiate with Jesus. And if we make that effort, then Jesus is going to reciprocate. And if Jesus had just walked by, it wouldn't have mattered that Zacchaeus was up that tree looking at him. That Jesus had to look and say, Zacchaeus, you come down. That he had to then initiate with him. And if we're up that tree, Jesus is going to initiate. There was no world where Jesus was just going to keep marching by. Because Zacchaeus was seeking him, and Jesus was going to seek back. I don't think we ever would have a situation where we would just, where he'd go, oh, well, you're looking for me, but I'm going to play hide and seek now. But it is, we see both these sort of worlds or theological views that on one hand, we have our personal responsibility to get out there and find Jesus ourselves. And on the other hand, we need Jesus to reach out to us for us to have a relationship with him. So when Jesus reaches, says, Zacchaeus, hurry, come down today. It's necessary to stay at your house. To the crowd, this would have been Jesus accepting him. It would have been implied just in that he was willing to go to his house, that Jesus was accepting him. And Zacchaeus comes straight down, and he's full of joy. And that should be our response to finding Jesus. Joy should be the response, because that relationship that was broken has been new again, that we're able to have a personal relationship with Jesus. So often, I find that, at least in my own thinking, I think of that we have to come to Jesus and we have to deal with our sin. And our sin is a problem. Our sin will keep us separated from Jesus. But it's more of like a clerical issue, that we have sin and Jesus is unaccepting of sin. We have this debt that needs to be paid. But then really, we're getting rid of sin, but that's not the goal. That's not the ultimate spot of salvation. The end of salvation is that we are able to renew a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. That's what the sin has to be dealt with, and it's gone. But once it's gone, then we get to interact with Jesus Christ again. We get to have a relationship with him, and that's where we should find this joy. And for me personally, that joy, it can go away. Where you can get so worked up about what is all going on in this social, political, even within the church, all these dynamics, where you just get exhausted by it. And it's not a joy anymore. It's miserable sometimes. And I think, what am I doing? Like, why even be involved? And I often say to my wife that if it wasn't for Jesus, I wouldn't be here. It's hard. Church isn't super easy. There are tough times. And there are times that the reason that I am here is because I want to be here with Jesus. And a lot of you I like well enough, but other, like, I'm here for Jesus. If it wasn't for him, I would be doing something. I'd probably go in for a run right now. Is what I would be doing. Like, Jesus is the reason. And I hope that he's the reason for the rest of you. Because if you're just here for the social benefits, then you're missing what's really going to give you joy. And that's having a relationship with Jesus Christ. And we now live in a world where sin isn't a big deal the way it used to be. We don't really live in a guilt-based world anymore where people feel bad about what they do. People do what they do. And it's not our place to judge them. And but they also are walking around with crystals in their pocket to give themselves good vibes. And they'll have their incense, and they all know what star thing they are, the Tauruses and whatever that is. I just don't know. I never could figure it out. And never had much interest. But they do. Because they want to have spirituality, they want to have that relationship. And when we sell Christianity as, oh, it's freedom from sin, it deals with your sin, they go, well, I'm not really that concerned about dealing with my sin. But what they do want is they want to have a spiritual relationship with something. And if we present the gospel, we present Christianity as not such a guilt-based system, but as a way that we can have a personal relationship with the God of the universe again. That I think that's what people really are going to be interested in. That relationship can be there. And yes, your sin has to be dealt with. But that's getting that out of the way so that we can get to the final goal. It's part of the trip. It's not the destination. The destination is relationship with Jesus Christ. And that's what people should be super excited about. And that's the way I think we should be going out and presenting the gospel is you can have a relationship with Jesus. All that spirituality that you're searching for, that you're open to, It's available through Jesus Christ. And that's, I think, where we really find that joy. And if we find spots where we are, like where I often find myself, where I'm going, what's the point of all this? This doesn't make me happy. I think it's that we really have to go, okay, I've lost sight of Jesus. That I've gotten so into all this other garbage that I'm not actually, like, I've lost sight of my relationship with Jesus Christ, and that's where you have to go back to and renew that relationship to find that joy again, because you're not going to find it in church politics or any sort of politics. It's not going to be there. You're not going to find it in relationships, because those are going to fall apart too. Where you're going to find this joy, the joy that gets the guy to jump right out of the tree, is with Jesus Christ. But all that being said, the crowd's still there, so they're still upset. All who saw it began to complain. He's gone to stay with a sinful man. So at this point, it's not even Zacchaeus they have a problem with. Now they also have a problem with Jesus, because he was open to even talking to this man, never mind going to his house. So we see this crowd who are despising both Jesus and the sinner. But they're despising Jesus because they have such a low view of that sinner, that you should have nothing to do with him, and Jesus is dirty by association. But it starts with their view of Zacchaeus. And then on the other hand, we see Jesus' view of Zacchaeus. We see Jesus' view of an outcast, his view of somebody who really, probably a decent argument to say, I wouldn't like him. I wouldn't be super glad when I saw old Zacchaeus come rolling in. But when we see how Jesus looked at him, he was just a precious lost sinner. There was nobody in that whole city that was worthy of having Jesus come to their house. When we look at Jesus, infinitely high, and then we look at Zacchaeus, so he's down here somewhere, and there's everybody else. And they're just a fraction of a step up above Zacchaeus, that they're nowhere close to Jesus. There was nowhere that Jesus could go for lunch that it wouldn't have been a step down. And there's nobody in this world that is so evil that compared to perfection, compared to Jesus Christ, that we're all that different then. And I mean, it's easy to look at that and go, well, Andrew, you need to watch the news a little bit more. No. There are people who have done heinous, disgusting things in the last week in this world. And we are not that different to them. We are sinners, infinitely separated from God, and they are sinners, infinitely separated from God. And that's how Jesus looks at all of us. When he looks down here, he sees precious lost sinners that need to have their relationship with him restored. But Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, "Look, I'll give half of my possessions to the poor, Lord. And if I have extorted anything from anyone, I'll pay back four times as much." So here we see a really simple conversion. Sometimes he really doesn't say anything, you know, with like, when I was a kid, I remember thinking like, what if I said the wrong words? Like, what if I approached this the wrong way? What if I didn't mean it enough? And we see with Zacchaeus that it wasn't super complicated. There is no trick special phrase that you have to say. It's that you have to want to have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And if you want to have that relationship, he'll find you. And it's really that simple. And then we see this change in Zacchaeus' life, in his life at that point, that we see this repentance. He turns away from his old ways. But that's really the natural result of what happened. His value system shifted. I don't think that giving away all of his money was super hard or difficult for him. Because before, the day before he met Jesus, the most important thing, the place that he found value, was in his money. That he was going to make money, he was really good at it, he had a lot of it, and that's what made him joyful, was the amount of money that he had. But when he started and this relationship was renewed with Jesus Christ, his whole priority system got flipped. That all of a sudden the money wasn't important anymore. What was important to him, what gave him joy, was his relationship with Jesus Christ. So he was very easily, it would seem, able to say, you know what? I'll give half of what I have to the poor, and anybody that I've defrauded, I'll give four times as much. Four times was the maximum penalty within the law. If it was, like if you did it willfully, you could just give them back what you had taken. But if you got caught, then the maximum penalty was four times. He just jumped straight to that. He says, you know what? Let's not worry about this or that. I'll just go to the maximum penalty. I'll give everybody back four times, because I don't think he cared anymore about his money, because his whole system of the things that he valued had changed. The things of this world no longer had value to him. And now what valued and what gave him joy was having that relationship with Jesus Christ. So we do. We definitely see a major change in him. We see that repentance, that changing the direction. But I think a lot of the rest of it, what he did then, was just the natural reaction to that change that happened. He certainly wasn't saved because he said, you know what, Jesus, if you can get me into heaven, I'm willing to give a lot of money to the poor. That had nothing to do with why he becomes a Christian that day. He becomes a Christian, he renews his relationship with Jesus Christ, and the natural reaction, the only reaction, is for him to completely change his priority system and make good for what he had done. So now Jesus says, today salvation has come to this house, Jesus told him, because he too is a son of Abraham. So here Jesus is bringing him back into the fold of the Israelite people, and really into that lineage of faith that God had. Not every person who was born a Jew actually followed God. And they really, but if we look at Abraham, who's sort of the very first one who had the promise given to him, Abraham believed the Lord and he credited it to him righteousness. So at the very beginning, we see that Abraham also came with faith. It wasn't this system of like, oh, you got born into the right nation, so you get to go to heaven. It was that he had faith in God, and that faith made him righteous. And then we also see that his actions then followed up on that, where he takes his son to sacrifice him, and he gets to almost, he's got the knife coming down, and his hand is stopped, and God saw that his actions were following up that faith that he had. Just like Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus came to Jesus in faith, and then his actions showed that he had changed. Abraham also came to God in faith, and then his actions showed that change. So Zacchaeus now moves into that group. And the final verse, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save the lost. So as we come up to Jesus just about to go to the cross, we really see the culmination of his entire ministry, and the reason that he came here was to seek and to save. And we can either become two different parts of that. On one point, we can become the crowd, and we can become a hindrance to people coming to Christ. And I think for all of us, it doesn't mean everything we're doing in our life is that. But for me, I've got to sit and think, what are the things that I do that would make somebody look at me and go, well, I know he's a Christian, but I'm not really, you know, there's nothing he does that makes me interested in it. What are the things that I don't think everything I do is a detriment, but I also would be kind of naive to think that there's nothing I do. So I think for all of us, it's worthwhile to take some time and think, what attitudes and what actions do I have that when people look at you, the result is that they're not drawn in to Christ. Maybe they're not even repulsed from it, but that they're not drawn in. And I think those are the things that we then need to look at, and I need to look at in my own life and go, okay, how can I change that? So that when people look at me, when they look at every aspect of my life, that they look and say, I want to know about the Jesus that's behind him. I want to be able to see through him and get to Jesus and figure that out. So we can be on that side. We can be the negative or the positive crowd. And then we also have a responsibility that this mission, that Jesus is no longer here, but that he sent the Holy Spirit to work with us so that we can continue this mission. And that we can continue to seek people with the power of the Holy Spirit, and the Spirit can still save people, just like Zacchaeus was saved that day. But we need to now be continuing that on, and not just going, oh, well, I'm pretty sure I'm a very great crowd member, but then that we're also actively going out and trying to seek people out for the Lord. I ended abruptly. I think that's where, I think really as a church, that's our mission statement from the whole book of Luke, and right from, especially from the story of Zacchaeus, is that we need to be out there trying to seek and to save people, and doing it in a way that is drawing those people, especially those outcasts of society, that are drawing them towards Jesus, and that we really just become a conduit of bringing people to Jesus. Because once they get to him, that's the only thing, that's the only relationship that's going to matter. We're just going to, is there another song? No? Yes. Okay. I'm going to pray, and then I have one more slide, and then you can come up. You can come up during the slide too if you want. You can come up whenever you want. Lord, we just take this time to pause and reflect on what we've learned from the story of Zacchaeus and the importance of the role that we can play in continuing your mission of seeking out lost sinners for salvation, Lord. And we just thank you that you saw fit to respond to us when we reached out for you, and that we're able to have that relationship with you, and that we would be able to grow and nurture it, and to maintain a focus on Jesus Christ, on you, Lord, and that we wouldn't be discouraged by the world around, that we would keep our focus locked on you, and that focus would give us the energy to go out and continue your mission. In your name, amen.